Okay, so let's review a little bit, and then we're going to go further. We started last time the topic of inviting people who may be Mechallel Shabbat if you invite them. So we discussed the permissibility of that. First, we saw the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe felt, we saw in two tshuvot, in one tshuva, he says, no, the exact case there was a children's minyan where the parents would have to drive the children, and he responded and said, you know, you may think that by inviting them that you're doing chinuch for tefillah, but why is chinuch for tefillah better than anti-chinuch for Shabbat? Because what you're doing is you're mechanech them not to keep Shabbat, so why should this be better? And in the second tshuva, Rav Moshe goes much further, and he says that not only is this a case of lifnei iver, this is a case of putting a stumbling block in front of the blind, this would also be considered to be something which is called mesit. Mesit is when a person tries to convince other people to do avodah zarah. The use of mesit in this particular case is not so simple, even though we pointed out that in the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam does use the idea of mesit in other cases, not just in avodah zarah. I did bring a whole bunch of opinions afterwards last week in order to show the limitations of lifnei iver. The limitations were, first and foremost, which the Gemara tells us, that lifnei iver doesn't apply unless it's a case of what's called two sides of the river, where you have a nazir on an island and he cannot get to any wine, and you're the one who brings him wine in your ferry. Without you bringing him wine, he would not be able to do that sin. And that would be a case of Torah level lifnei iver. On the other hand, for a person to sell cigarettes in his kiosk, where there are 20 different kiosks up and down the road, and for you to sell cigarettes to somebody, and of course I'm assuming in this example that smoking cigarettes are prohibited by law as well, all rabbis should consider, then are you guilty for lifnei iver, forgiving the person? Well, that's not two sides of the river, because it's easily accessible. They could have gotten it from someplace else, so that would not consider to be a Torah level of lifnei iver. On the other hand, we found that there may be a couple of different possibilities regarding a rabbinic level of lifnei iver. One, Rashi, we saw a limitation based on Rashi, which was that it would have to be immediate, that if it's something where there's a time delay, then that would not be the rabbinic level. We also saw, according to Tosfot, that it would seem to be that the reason for the rabbinic level is because of what we would call tochecha, of rebuke, of warning somebody not to sin. So what we were getting the sense is that perhaps there were some limitations, and I just want a full disclosure. Most of what I said was based upon a class or a shir, which is based upon something that Rav Lichtenstein had said. And then we saw a whole nother tshuva, and that was a tshuva in the Sheilot and Tshuvot, Tshuvot v'Hanhagot, Rav Moshe Sternbach. And he very simply said that, you know, there's no lifnei iver over here because you have in mind for something which is good. Now, before we move on, I do want to put something forward, because I think that the attack against Rav Moshe's position was a little bit too strong, and I'll show you exactly why. And I've seen a number of people who've taken this approach, and again, as I want to stress, I don't think that this approach is correct for the following reason. The idea of two different sides of the river, which is the Gemara's conclusion, is not necessarily the only type of lifnei iver. And I want to be very clear. If we're dealing with this type of lifnei iver, where you are facilitating sin, where the person could not sin unless you facilitated, the way to make an application of that example would be, let's say that you invite somebody, they said, well, I just can't get there on Shabbat, and you say, no problem, here's my car and here's my car keys, right? That would be an example of a lifnei iver on a Torah level where you facilitate the sin, they could not do it without you. That would be, again, clearly a Torah level, and there is not much to discuss. On the other hand, when you invite somebody and they would anyway be driving, which, by the way, I'm not so sure you can necessarily prove that they would have been Mechallel Shabbat if you didn't invite them. I mean, I know a lot of people say that, well, they're not religious, so anyway they'd be Mechallel Shabbat. Yeah, so how do you know that exactly? Okay, so but let me continue. And the problem is that there's a whole other type of lifnei iver, which I'm pretty convinced is what Rav Moshe was really talking about. And I hate to say this, but therefore, everything I said last week in terms of all the limitations of Lifnei Iver would not apply because of this consideration. And I discussed this with Rav Shabtai Rappaport, his grandson-in-law, and he agreed with me 100% that this is what Rav Moshe felt, and this is what he was thinking, and my distinction is a correct distinction. Again, we'll go with that, we'll see shortly. The Sifra, which is in source 19, which I'm not sure if we really have to read, because we can just read Rashi in source 20. And this is Rashi that every single one of you, theoretically, should be aware of, because it's Rashi's commentary on the Torah. The Torah, this is on page 24 on the new page, which you should have taken for today. On the pasuk itself, on the verse where it says, "V'lifnei iver lo titein michshal," in front of a blind person, don't put a stumbling block. How does Rashi explain this? Lifnei, this one, lifnei hasuma bidavar. What does hasuma bidavar mean? Somebody who is relatively blind. They're not blind objectively. I'll take that also. They're not objectively blind. They're somebody who is subjectively blind. Lo titein etza she'ena hogenet lo. Do not give advice which is not appropriate for him. Al tomar machur sadcha v'kach lecha chamor. Don't tell somebody, go sell your field and buy yourself a donkey. And therefore, what do you do? Then you go and buy the field. Which means, Rashi's saying, what's bad advice? And he's giving you an example. Bad advice is self-serving bad advice. You tell somebody, oh, that field, you should get rid of it, buy a donkey with it. Why are you telling him this? Because you want his field. So therefore, that would be a case of putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person, because what you're doing is you're giving them advice which is bad for them. How do I know that you think it's bad for them? Because you think that field is a good field, because you're the one who wants to get the field. If we want to go back to the source that Rashi is getting this from, and by the way, to the best of my knowledge, this is not written in the Gemara. This, what Rashi told us here is not based on the Gemara, but it is based upon what's called the Midrash Halacha, the Sifra, which is source 19. Somebody asks you advice. Can this man marry this woman? Is it not allowed? Don't say yes if the answer is no. Somebody comes to you for advice. Don't tell the guy to get up early, and that's the time that the robbers are out, and so on and so forth. And it does also give the example, which is where Rashi got it from. The end of the verse says, you should fear God. So why is that thrown in this verse? Why doesn't it say kaved v'avicha v'timecha and fear God? The Gemara and the Midrash Halacha have a principle that when something is unknown, and you can say, listen, that's what I thought. It says fear God when something could be subjective. God knows what you're really thinking. You can go and justify yourself. No, I really want, I have the best interest in mind. Donkeys are in season this year, or whatever else you want to say. It says, no, God knows what you're really thinking. So when you give advice, you should be giving advice which you believe is good, is really good advice. Now, this is a completely different type of Lifnei Iver. Do you all see that? Because this Lifnei Iver, the whole thing of two sides of a river, just doesn't apply. There's one type of Lifnei Iver where you are facilitating someone to sin. You are helping someone sin. They cannot sin without you. Over here, what does the Torah say? Don't put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. Somebody who's relatively blind, somebody who is lacking some kind of knowledge in this particular area, you give them bad advice, that's putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person. And that's a Torah-level law without anything to do with the two sides of the river. The Rambam, right, the sin is that you're putting up a stumbling block, giving bad advice. Right, you're giving bad advice. By the way, the first case of the Sifra there is. You're telling somebody they can marry somebody who they can't. Which is the case? Which is the case we're talking about?
Giving someone advice to come to a youth minion when you know that they're going to be sinning to do it.
Right, so that's...
There's no sin involved in this one.
No, there is in the first case there, which says the don't give someone advice to marry someone they're not allowed to marry. Your advice is what's causing them to sin. The Rambam in Source 22 writes, Kol shasur lemkor lagoy, asur lemkor liYisrael, shuhu listim. Now the Rambam over here is talking the laws of murder and preservation of life. Hilchot ritzicha, rotzeach, vishmirat nefesh. It's talking about selling arms to a non-Jew. That was a previous law. What's the halacha? You're not allowed to sell arms to a non-Jew. Why? Lifnei evil titein michshal. Okay, let's leave that for now. But also to sell a Jew who is a criminal. Because by doing this, you are strengthening or giving hand, giving to support to a sinner. V'chein kol hamachshil iver bidavar, anybody who causes someone blind to stumble, v'hisiu etza she'enu hagenet lo, and gives advice which is not appropriate for him, o shechizek yidei ovrei avera, or they support somebody who is sinning, shehu iver v'enu ra'eh derech emet, he's blind, doesn't see the correct way, b'nei ta'avat libo, because of his desires, hareza over below ta'aseh she'nemar v'nei evil lo titein michshol. Someone comes to you for advice, give them proper advice. Here we see a whole other type of lifnei iver, which again is considered to be a Torah law, both by Rashi, by virtue of him giving this as the primary interpretation of the verse. It's also seen in the Rambam. If we look at the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvot, source 21, V'mitzvah HaResh Tzadi Tet, 299, Hisharnu mehachshal kitzatenu et kitzatenu ba'itza. We are not allowed to give one of our people bad advice. Somebody wants to, again, come to you for advice and so on, give them advice which is proper, which again you see that the Rambam is saying that giving proper advice to somebody is the primary definition of lo titein, of lifnei evil lo titein michshol. V'om yitalev lifnei evil lo titein michshol, and then he quotes the Sifra, v'lav zeh, where it's underlined, amru shehu kolel kol mi sheyazor al avira u'yisavev ota, ki hu yaveh ha'isha hu she'er avira ta'avato ein sichlo, v'chazar iver, v'yifateh v'Israel la'ashlim avirato o'yach, anybody who wants to sin and you help them sin, this would all be included. He goes on to examples of lending somebody money with interest and so on. Aside from the problem of interest, facilitating this may also be involved in lifnei iver. So again, this may be interesting because even though the Gemara did clearly come to the conclusion, lifnei iver, what's that? Only two sides of a river. I don't think this is the same type of lifnei iver. I think there are two types of lifnei iver. One type is the case of the nazir. Again, helping somebody sin, providing them the means to sin. That's lifnei iver. For that to be a Torah level lifnei iver, that would need to be that they could not sin without you. If they could sin without you, that would not be the Torah level of lifnei iver. But there's a whole other type of lifnei iver, and what's that? And that is giving somebody bad advice. And that is most likely what Rav Moshe is referring to. So therefore, the protest of saying, hold it a second, this doesn't really fit into lifnei iver because it's not two sides of the river, and it would only be lifnei iver, as I said before, if you actually gave him the car keys. What if the guy had, what if the person had no desire whatsoever Friday night to get into a car? Friday night, they had every desire just to sit at home and have a candlelight dinner at home. Whether the candles count as candles for Shabbat or not, but that's what they had in mind. And you say, no, why don't you come to a Shabbat dinner by us? And they get in the car and drive. So are you guilty of lifnei iver in that case? So to say it's two sides of the river, yes, they could have broken Shabbat without you. But in terms of giving bad advice, perhaps that's a Torah level of bad advice in terms of lifnei iver. So therefore, I just wanted to go back and say, hold it. Even though I made it look last week that we could just throw Rav Moshe away and Rav Moshe was not to be considered, over here, it's maybe not as simple as I put forward. Okay, good. So now let's so the parallel to what?
Giving somebody like self-serving advice. You're not giving them self-serving advice.
self-serving.
Well, it didn't have to be self-serving. That was one of the examples. Again, in the Sifra...
Isn't bad advice somewhat subjective? In other words, like...
Yes.
That's
the point.
That's the... If I'm that rabbi in that show and I have, you know, my intentions are really good and pure and like, zero shame, true bad, if I just show them what the youth movement is like, then blah, 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 then I have good intentions.
I agree.
Self-serving to, I guess the question is this, that rabbi is like, let's say, wants to just get more membership.
I agree.
And he figures, oh, I'll prey on the, ignorance.
Right. So I'll say again that I agree. But what I'm pointing out is that Rav Moshe's hesitation over here, and again, I want to stress, this is in the 1950s, and he's talking about a case where people are taking down certain barriers, and therefore to invite them to come to shul, he sees as being problematic. But even though I was able to show, oh, there's nothing to talk about Lifnei Iver, because it's not a Torah level of Lifnei Iver in his case, it's not obedient, so it may not even be a rabbinic level, I just wanted to point out that if you go to the other level of Lifnei Iver, there's what to talk about. Now, both of the hesitations, which I heard over here, I think are very fair hesitations. And I want to read to you, actually, two tshuvot of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Yeah. It's okay. It wasn't here. It was the law before.
No,
it happened to be the law before. And then he says, just like you can't sell to non-Jews, you shouldn't sell to a Jew who's a criminal. And that's how this law began. Okay, that was just context. Okay, back in the sources from last week, on page 4, source 15, we have a tshuva from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he himself hesitates on this, and it's not clear to what extent he's comfortable with what he's about to say, but he'll say it anyway. Kibud ba'achila v'shtiya l'mish yodea shelo yivarech. Am I allowed to serve food to somebody who you know won't give a bracha? Now, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, during his lifetime, was the most important rabbi in Israel, and towards the end of his life was the most important rabbi in the entire world. In terms of halacha, Rav Moshe Feinstein, until he passed away, really had that title, which they give around as Posek Hador. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach took his place, and probably for the last 10 years of his life, was the address that people would come to ask questions. Over here, brings up a very specific case. What about somebody who's a respectful individual? By respectful, I mean he's respectful to religious people. He's somebody who perhaps even supports Torah institutions, but he's not a religious person by himself, and he will not make a bracha. Am I allowed to serve him food? Now, this is part of a whole other problem, which I have not decided to what extent we're going to get into, because I'm just pointing out this is an issue on the sidelines, and maybe I'll do this as the next topic more fully, but there seems to be a halacha. You like the way I say that? There seems to be a halacha that you're not allowed to give food to somebody who won't make a bracha. Why not? Lifnei Iver lo titein michshol. Can't give him food. Which may actually limit this whole thing of allowing people to invite people for Friday night if you can't give them food anyway. So, yeah. So let's read the tshuva. B'had tzarach kol adam lasum drachav lachavin ma'asav l'shem shemayim. Every person, what they do, they should always do it for the sake of heaven. Choshavni, I was thinking, b'misha ba'ilav oreach chashuv, somebody who has an important guest, asher einenu shomer Torah mitzvot, who's not observant, avol adayin yesh lo ahava l'vnei Torah, but he's still respectful and has love of Torah. V'gam tomech b'mosdot Torah u'chadome, and somebody who's a supporter of institutions, and so on. Or something like that. Ve'im habalabayit lo nahegimo benimus, if the host will not treat him with normal respect, hamakubal lekabed oto b'midei demichel u'mishtei, by giving him what's appropriate in terms of food and drink, biglal zeh shemitzad hadin asur litet lechol el mishodeh shenotayadav morvech, according to the actual halacha, and he quotes in Shulchan Aruch Or Chaim Kuf Samachtet. He says, according to halacha, you're not allowed to give a person food unless you know that they're going to make a bracha. Even if in a respectful fashion you were to ask the person to wash his hands, make a bracha, you're a dove pigia. It's going to look as an insult, ve'elbon bechvado, and it's going to be degrading to this person's honor. And may get the person very upset. You'll be causing this person to move away from religious people. And cause him hatred and anger and hatred against people who go in the path of Torah. In such a case, I thought, that the proper thing really is to give the person food and drink, and to ignore the prohibition of lifnei iver, even though we don't tell a person to sin, to save somebody from doing a larger sin, which is a concept that also I may come back to. And likewise, the example of that is that you're not supposed to take truma on something, which is asur on Shabbat, on a lower level, to prevent somebody from eating something which does not have truma and ma'aser taken from. Mikol makom b'nidan zeh. Nonetheless, in this case, hoil v'kol ha'isur shel notin lo le'echol hu rak avira shel netinat michshol. The whole problem over here is placing a stumbling block. V'kevin shem lo yitein lo le'echol harei yichashel harech b'isur yoter gadol. But if you don't give him food, then you're going to be putting a larger stumbling block in front of the person. Nimtza de leika klal shum aveira. And that's the case, there's no sin whatsoever. Kevin de leika hacha shum netinat michshol. In such a case, you're not putting a stumbling block. El adraba yesh kan hatzalam me'amichshol gadol ma'od. You're saving him from a larger stumbling block. Ayideh she'echlif oto bikum va'aseh b'michshol yoter katan, by getting rid of the smaller michshol. Basically, what he's saying over here is when I can't do something because of lifnei iver, that I have to take a look and see, is my lifnei iver that I'm concerned about a large one or a small one? And he thinks over here that when I look at this lifnei iver, this stumbling block, it's in actuality the one I'm concerned about is a smaller stumbling block, namely on a one-time basis to give somebody something to eat that they'll eat something without making a bracha, is more of a stumbling block than forcing somebody or causing somebody to have hatred towards rabbis, as would be the case if he actually had a guest, because he thought that would be a much larger stumbling block not to give him food. What he's doing is he's saying is let's take a look at lifnei iver, placing a stumbling block in front of someone, not in terms of a micro behavior, but in terms of the macro of what's taking place. And then at the end he writes, "Masha'ein kem b'nadidan harei zedom l'misha kotea etzba miraglo shel chaveru b'chdei lahatzil oto b'kach b'ktiyat kol hayad shelo." And this is very similar to something that Rav Sternbach said. He said, "No, it's also it would be comparable. You're not allowed to hurt somebody, but what if somebody's finger is infected? So therefore, you're going to cut off a finger to save the whole arm. Would that be something which is allowed? Clearly the case." And he says, so here as well, it's not even that I say, oh, but he did chabalah to him. No, there's no chabalah because he's really saving him. So he says, the poshidu to einu karoi mazik ela metaken. That person is not a mazik, he's not doing damage, he's metaken, he's fixing. U mitzvahu to ka'avid velo aveira. That person did a mitzvah, not aveira. Gam kach gam kan, also in this case, einu choshiv kimichshil. Kimachshil, it's not considered to be a stumbling block. El adarab emaseu zeh, hu matzil oto mi'avon chamor shel senat Torah v'lomdeha. Over here, you're saving a person from a larger stumbling block. V'lekach nir delfiyat tzorech shapir reshayid lechabed oto b'machil mishteh. And therefore, he says, as necessary, a person is allowed to provide food. V'tzorech lasot kein alpi, afal pishe zeh b'kum vaseh, even though you are, yourself, physically placing food in front of this person. Now, I do have to point out at the very end over here, it says, Ha'arat ha'mechaber, this is towards the end of the second line from the bottom, Halum no dash maran bala chazon ish zatzal b'shviyid simen yudbet, something, Einu matir b'gavnu b'isr vaday. He says, nonetheless, the chazon ish disagreed with me. So now, is he writing this because he's telling you, therefore, don't listen to what I just now said? Meaning, what's the purpose of him writing this hesitation? It's not very clear. So I'm saying, Rav Shlomo Zalman is leaving the door open over here. He gave a very logical argument, but I just want to consider two limitations from this. Excuse me. Right, right. That's what bothers me about the isravada. If you know for certain that in a case where certainly a person's going to break, the limitations of this tshuva are that we're not talking exactly about the same case. The reason we would want to use this tshuva is because he is telling us when we're looking at Lifnei Iver to look at it in terms of a macro instead of looking at it in terms of micro. Look at it into long-term impact on the individual, not just in terms of technically putting a stumbling block in front of somebody. And but again, the fact that he backed down at the end, albeit in a case where it's vada iser, where you're sure that something's going to take place, is also not clear. Is he just being polite and saying, well, the Chazon Ish disagrees with me, or is he taking on the Chazon Ish? I mean, Rav Shlomo Zalman was not afraid to take on the Chazon Ish. He actually made his reputation in the world of Torah as a very young person. I think around 23 or so, he wrote a major work on electricity on Shabbos, and he took apart the Chazon Ish's position on it. So, I mean, he was the main person who disagreed with the Chazon Ish. So, and I say he did that as a young person. I don't have any reason to think if he really was confident, he would have disagreed here. But I'm saying he himself hesitates. Yeah.
Can you use this to the example of driving on Shabbat?
So that's going to be the question. Now, this is what Rav Shlomo Zalman published. There's also, and I mentioned this last week as a mythological position, one which there were rumors about. I even have this. I was searching a little bit just to see how people deal with it. Here's a question which was asked on one of these Ask the Rabbi things on the internet, which there are many of them. But this one is significant because it was written to the yeshiva called Or Sameach. The rabbi writes, I'm a mashkiach and I'm in Western City. I'm involved with very secular Jews. I would like to have guests for Shabbat, but the problem is that there is the definite chance they will be chilul Shabbat, like driving their car to my home. I'm allowed to have them over to my home for the Shabbat meal. He then says, the answer which is given, as you know, it's forbidden to cause a fellow Jew to transgress the Torah. This is true regardless of the person's level of observance of affiliation, but what if your intention is to show the person the beauty of Torah's observance? Your question was asked to a renowned halachic authority in Jerusalem. Now, I'm not going to continue reading the answer right now, but in the answer, he never says who that renowned halachic authority is. Okay? The renowned halachic authority is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who wrote a tshuva which he himself would not publish. So that also may tell you something, and he asked it not to be published. Okay? That should also tell you something. Why did he feel that this was the case? That he did not want this to become mainstream behavior. He wanted this to be only people that he felt needed to know about it. Nonetheless, it was published in a book and in other places as well. You can even download this on the internet. There's a place called jewishbooks.com that you get lots and lots of Jewish books where there's no longer copyright on them or their authors gave permission to put it up. All kinds of journals and things, everything which is more than 50 years old, you will you can find there, including the Coca-Cola tshuva that I gave to Yaakov. So on the last page of your sources, there is a rabbi, a very prominent rabbi, named Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt. Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt, if any of you are from Memphis, would know immediately who he is. He was born in Israel. He came to America to study with Rav Moshe. A job opened up in Memphis. He was told to go there. He is an old-time Yerushalmi sort of Jew. He goes with a long coat. He goes with the whole thing. He is a very big Talmud Chacham, one of the most prominent poskim in America today. Rabbi Greenblatt went and took Rav Shlomo Zalman's tshuva and published it. Just, I don't know if anybody was happy with this or upset with him, or if Shlomo Zalman didn't want to publish, he published it. And this you have on the last page over here, the last page of the last week's sources. Simon Tuf Bet. Meharav Hagon of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Zatzal, V'ye V'zichrei Nishmato K'tosha V'sheskuto Tagen Aleinu Amen Keni Hiratzon. This is, now you notice that Shlomo Zalman has passed away at this point. And he says, may his merit, you know, may his memory protect us, and may his memory be for blessing, so on and so forth. And he's not concerned about Shlomo Zalman's hesitation on this. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Po Ir HaKodesh Yerushalayim, and so on. Yom Dalad Nisan Tavshin Memchet. which also makes it, excuse me? What? 1988. Lichvod Yedidi Mechubad HaRav Michael Shun Shlita Chav Shon, you know him, okay? Chaver Hanalat Yeshivat Or Sameach Be'er Kodesh Yerushalayim. Hineni Meshiv Lezeh B'zeh B'kitzur Ala Sheilot Shechvodo Hitzig B'bnei B'kesher L'nihul Minyan Tfila Avur Rechokim. Regarding your question of having a minyan for people who are distanced from Judaism, which, by the way, goes back to the question that Rav Moshe was dealing with in the very beginning, and Rav Moshe said this is a case of Lifnei Iver and Mesit. Shirotzim l'karevo tom l'torah v'mitzvot, al yidei hishtatutfam b'sidrei tefillah, you want to bring them closer by their preparation, by their participation in a minyan, uvehistamech ala sefer chashuv melamed lahoil, simen kavtet shivim b'arbe gdolei olam, lahakel b'zeh mechalei shabbat shebezmenu, shehim ke'in tinokot shenishbu. Hopefully you remember that source that we saw, that the Milamid Lahoil, or David Tzvi Hoffman, was asked, can we use non-Shabbat observers as part of a minyan? And his answer was that in today's generation, non-Shabbat observers are people who daven and say Kiddush, and people who accept that there is a God, and so on and so forth, and they expect that God created the world. So in such a case, they are like infants who have been kidnapped, ubeprat kishze na aselama torah kedusha shel kiruv rechokim l'torah v'yirashamayim. And certainly in a case where your objective is to bring them close, l'chein nir l'fiat da'ati pashut kidahalan. And therefore, here is my conclusion, as follows: A, aleph, mutar lahazmin gam mishagar rechok b'makom atfila. You are permitted to invite somebody who lives far away. You should invite them and offer them a place to stay. And even if they don't accept this, your offer, you don't have to tell them that they don't, that they shouldn't come. And you do not have to tell them that it is prohibited for them to come by car. So, what's he saying? He's saying that if you invite somebody and tell them, we're having a minyan, and if you like, I can arrange for you a place to stay. He's saying in such a case, there's no lifnei iver. Why not? Right. You're not telling them that they have to break Shabbat. You're creating a situation. They don't have to break Shabbat. If they choose to break Shabbat, that's not because of you. That's because that's what they chose. Continue. Bet. Migrash chanayah shel beit ha-knesset asher bo mekayimim tefillah chayav liot sagur b'meshach kol ha-shabbat, yom tov. Okay? Make sure that the place, that the shul itself, the parking lot, is closed. Gimel. Rutzor lo letzorif mishadayin machal shabbat b'fer hesel l'minyan. It's better not to count them in the 10 of the minyan. If you have 10 people without them, you can certainly give them an aliyah. And if there's a kohen among the non-religious, they can go up as a kohen to bless the people. So it says, may you have success in bringing people close to God, and maybe you feel salvation forever. There's really no limitation over here, which makes you really get to question, now, why didn't he publish this? Well, the answer is, I'm going to read to you the English right now for a second, and from reading the English, you may understand what the consideration was. Your question was asked to a renowned halachic authority in Jerusalem who said that if you have a proven talent for reaching out to non-observant people, by the way, did you notice that in the tshuva? It's not there. But that's what he told them as the reason not to publish it. He said to them, this was the oral part of the tshuva, this is for somebody, this tshuva is not for the masses, I am not publishing this tshuva, this is only for somebody who, I'll read it again, has a proven talent for reaching out to non-observant people, then you can invite them Shabbat. But the invitation must include the option to stay in walking distance for the entire Shabbat. Even if you're sure they'll choose to drive, you've done your part by sincerely offering to accommodate them. So now, when you read this answer in English, you're not exactly sure what happened, so now hopefully you understand what happened. Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote the tshuva. He wrote it for them, but he asked them not to give it, not to spread it around. Of course, what happened? It was immediately spread around. It was put in multiple books. But his what he told them not to spread it was because of that consideration. Of course, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of rabbis today who would consider themselves to be professional and so on, with proven success and so on and so forth, that would feel that they are within this category. But we're going to go back and try to figure out the theory still. Yeah. So let's continue then. Yeah. Okay. So let's continue then. Yeah. I can't speak for them. I can only assume that they did. Yes. So here you.
He
said you can.
That
he disagrees with you. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if it's not for here per se, but like they're gonna draw and they're gonna go to a movie, you might as well have them come over for Friday night dinner. Like you know they're not gonna become the team from the experience, but
you know that.
Let's get
it. You know if you're a
right.
person who's good at Kiruv.
Right.
So let's okay. But
with proven.
That's not your goal.
With. But with proven success, you notice that he put in the answer.
Right.
But that's why I want to go back to the theory over here. What is the theory that Rav Shlomo Zalman is working with? And he did a couple of things here. First of all, if I take his own tshuva that he wrote regarding the giving the person what to eat, what did he say over there? There he said, you don't look at Lifnei Iver in terms of the micro, you look in terms of the macro. It's true in that case he had to work harder. Why did he have to work harder in that case? Because that was a case of the first type of Lifnei Iver. Remember I told you there's two different kinds of Lifnei Iver? One type is to give the wine to the Nazir, right? One type is to provide, to facilitate the sin. The second type was to give bad advice. In the type of giving bad, in the type of handing something over, he has to work much harder. Why? Because he has to show that by not giving it is a larger Lifnei Iver, but what is it? But what has he shown us here? That as far as he's concerned, Lifnei Iver, again, putting a stumbling block, is something that I look in terms of the macro analysis and not necessarily the micro analysis. Once I've said that, and I go back to this case is actually much easier, because over here, you are not facilitating the sin, and he did one more thing to make sure that you're not facilitating the sin, and what's that? Give the other option, meaning you're the one who says, please come over Friday night. When you say, please come over Friday night, and by the way, this may still be a problem for you to send an invitation for a bar mitzvah, which is Shabbat morning. That can still be a problem, because what are you saying to them? Please come over Shabbat morning. That could be a problem. Okay, sending an invitation to somebody who's not religious, who may very well decide to come, right? That could be a problem. So again, I want to stress, Friday night, you tell somebody, please come over Friday night. So hold it, this could be giving bad advice to somebody. So now if I take the macro perspective, and I'm saying, no, based upon my experience, that this may help bring this person closer to Torah, so therefore it's not that I'm putting a stumbling block in front of somebody. I'm doing quite the opposite. I'm removing a stumbling block from in front of somebody because this may bring them closer. On the other hand, he did a second thing, and that second thing was, even if you're going to claim that technically I'm the one who's facilitating this, and again I'm insisting that this may really be the other type of Lifnei Iver, he's saying, okay, offer them a place to stay, and now you're home free. Even if you know that you're not going to take it, because you're not really causing them to sin. Meaning, you're the one who said, please come. You also said, please stay over. They don't want to take up that offer. Why is this not Lifnei Iver? Because, let's go back to the fundamental. What is Lifnei Iver? Lifnei Iver is the idea of giving bad advice. What is it? V'yareitim elokecha and fear God. What is Lifnei Iver? Lifnei Iver is you are giving bad advice to somebody. But by the way, let's play with this a little bit. What if you give somebody good advice and it turns out to be bad advice? You tell them to buy stock in this and this thing and then the stock falls. Were you guilty of Lifnei Iver?
No, it's unintentional.
Of course not. So it's not lefnaver. Why not? You didn't put a stumbling block in front. Why? Because you didn't intend to mess them up. What if you gave somebody what you thought was great advice? It turned out to be bad advice. Was that lefnaver? No. So what's lefnaver? By the way, what if you gave them bad advice? You told them to buy a stock that you were convinced would fall, and it goes up. Were you guilty of lefnaver? That's something the post. That's something the post can. That good. That right. That's something the post can do speak about and says, "What is lefnaver? Was it the right? Was it the advice, or was the advice that was taken? You know, when did you break it? When you gave the advice, or when the person followed your advice?" I'm saying that may be a harder case, but in this case, when you tell somebody, "Come over Friday night for dinner," do you have what you think is their best interest in mind? So if that's the case, then there's not lefnaver. Saying if that's the case, lefnaver would seem to fall apart. Now, I've seen people who've said that Rav Shlomo Zalman's attitude over here towards lefnaver is somewhat revolutionary. Why is it revolutionary? Because he's saying, let's look at macro and not micro in terms of intentions. I'm not convinced it's revolutionary. In fact, that's some of the other things that you have on this page, which I gave to you today. On source 23, on page 24, we have a tshuva by Rev Weinberg, the author of the Sridei Esh. Rev Weinberg's 20th century. He survived the Holocaust. That's why he called the book the Sridei Esh. He has a long tshuva where he deals with the appropriateness of selling, of a butcher selling meat. I'm not going to get into the whole kind of case, but that's where he's going with this. And over here, Anaf Sheni, this is the second part of the tshuva, which is already subsection 20. He likes to write long tshuvot. He writes, Nira ki b'makom shemichshal mitkaven lasot mitzvah ein din lefnei iver. Where a person may think they're doing a mitzvah, you cannot call it lefneiver. Now, all of you now know why that's the case. Why is it the case? The intention. I can only when we said that there's another category of lefneiver, giving bad advice to somebody. What is the definition of bad advice? That you think you're giving them bad advice. What if you think that you're doing something which is good for them? It cannot be lefneiver according to this. And he writes, "V'ikur adin delefneiva lule mistafina." This is a great word, great phrase that you can use all the time if you like. If I weren't afraid, lule mistafina, sometimes lule dimistafina. If I were not afraid, mirabotenu gdolei achronim, from the great authorities of the age, hayiti omer demakom shemichshal mitkaven lasot mitzvah. In a case where the person who places the so-called stumbling block thinks he's doing mitzvah. Ein b'zeh mishum lefneiver. In such a case, they cannot be lefneiver. Dinei kfar hivenu la'el at divrei Rashi, v'kein lashon ha-mishna begitin, shatame iser shel lefneiver hu, shelo lahazik yidei ovrei avera. It's not to cause somebody harm. Yidei ha-siyua hu meraglim b'kach. By helping them, they're going to become accustomed to this particular sin. V'kach, and then he quotes the Rambam as well, v'rei kasha, madua over michshel t'chaveiro, im chaveiro yodea. Okay, I'm going to skip a little bit here. Let's get to the bottom where it's bold. Ulefi zet sarach lomar mitzad hasfara, shebamakom sheyesh lefan of mitzvah la'asot, ein li manami mitzvah zu, afil bamakom sheyachol legrom sheyadeze, ya'avor chaviro avira. That in a case where you are performing a mitzvah, you do not have to worry that the other person may be doing a sin. Shehu ein erotze lahachzik yidei ovrei avira, your concern is not to make people sin. Your concern is to do mitzvah. The adiraba ayidei ze yorer rigshei tshuva v'charata b'leiv ha'avaryan l'ra'ot derech ha'emet p'rato she'chaviro mishtayel l'kai mitzvah borei. He's here dealing with the case of selling meat, which is kosher, non-kosher meat, somebody buying it and so forth. I don't want to get into the whole case over here because what he's saying is much more appropriate to his case. But on the other hand, the logic that he's using over here, I think, helps us a lot because he's saying it goes on intention. And a matter of fact, he quotes Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah is a Rishon. And let's read his proof, Kaf Aleph, the next line, where it's not bolded. V'hadavrim refurashim Rabbeinu Yonah, sof perichet de brachot. And he goes, my position is seen very clearly in the Gemara in Brachot. Again, Rabbeinu Yonah's commentary to it. Derif mevi shamamar, I believe it's Rav Yo, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. The Rif brings a statement to Rav Yehuda and the Rav Rav from Cholin. Lo yitain adam prusa l'shamash ela im ken yodeya bo shenatal yadav. A person should not give food to a shamash. Shamash would be somebody who's waiting for you, a waiter, somebody's bringing food. You should not give them food unless you know they're going to wash. The problem over here is that the guy's going to be so busy doing what he's doing that we're afraid he's going to forget to wash. We're not necessarily dealing with a sinner over here, but by you giving him food when the guy's in the middle of working, we're afraid that you're going to cause the person to sin. V'katav al zeh Rabbeinu Yonazal, yesh lamdim mikan, she'ein roi letet loche el mishu dea bo, she'yivarech. There are those who learned from this that you're not supposed to give food to somebody unless you know they're going to make a bracha. Right? It turns it from the case, okay? V'nira, shekivan shemitkaven lasot mitzvah, shenotein b'torat staka, mutar. He goes, but what if you're giving somebody food because they're hungry? Which means, let's say there's a poor person who comes to your door and I need food. So should you look and check if they, you know, have a yarmulke on their heads or check if they know how, give them a brachas test first, right? Go and go test them if they know which bracha to say in which situation. What does he say? No. That the problem, again, what's the problem of Lufnei Iver? For you to stand in front of God and for God to say, was that done with good intentions or bad intentions? Anything which was that done to serve me or not to serve me? That's the question. That's what God is going to ask one day. So therefore, in the case where you tell the guy, well, sell the field, buy the donkey because you want it, so what were your intentions over here? Your intentions were not to help the person. You gave him bad advice. What if you gave him, and this you all got the right answer to this, what if you give somebody what you think is good advice, it turns out to bad advice? Can anybody claim that you are guilty of putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person? No. Because as far as you were concerned, it wasn't a stumbling block. So you can stand in front of God one day and say, I thought that was good advice. I didn't know. I thought it was good advice. So over here, in the case of giving somebody food because they're hungry, to give them staka. And by the way, what's amazing over here to us now is why did Rav Shlomo Zalman miss this? Because this seems much closer to his case. I'm performing a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? I'm performing the mitzvah of Hachnasat Rechim. I have guests in my house, guests sitting in my house. The case of the Gemara was a case of somebody who's a shamash. Over here, there's somebody in my house. I'm giving him food. I'm doing mitzvah achnas sarachim. God asked me one day, why did you give this person food and make a bracha? I was doing a mitzvah. So therefore, Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that you're allowed to give somebody who needs it for tzedakah, and then I don't have to start testing him, do they know brachot or not. Why? Because in such a case, there's no lifnei either. Yeah. Okay, that's another way of looking at this micro versus this macro analysis.
The other thing that I was thinking is, to what extent then, what are the ramifications of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach sort of saying that you have a certain element of like Chilul Hashem in not giving him food?
Right.
In other words, in you know, behaving in such a way that seems not mikubal socially or whatever.
Right. He seems to take that seriously.
How far do you take that?
You'll ask on a case-by-case basis. But he seems to be saying is that when we look at Lifnei Iver, we judge this in terms of the macro situation, not in terms of the micro.
So it goes to your sending your bar mitzvah invitation. In other words, if I'm so concerned that people might drive to my Shabbat morning tefillah,
yeah,
that I then don't invite them or whatever, then...
Or you invite them and offer them a place to stay at least. Because I'm saying that also may help you get out of the problem. Yeah. If you think that what you're doing is wrong, again, I can't deal with that. You've fooled yourself. If you think that this is real, if you really think that this is something which is good and helpful and so on, and this is something which God wants, then I can't call it Lifnei Iver. That's the point over here. Lifnei Iver is giving somebody something which is bad advice. If this is the case, and again, admittedly, the Sri De'esh is not talking about a case of inviting somebody on Shabbat. He's dealing with a different case of Lifnei Iver. But what he says over here is a general principle that if somebody is doing something which they think to be good, then it's not Lifnei Iver. I think that helps us a lot. It also helps us going back to Rav Moshe, which means if I now say that Rav Moshe's problem was, one, it's Mesit, and one, that it's causing someone to sin, and one, that it's Lifnei Iver, and I say, but my intention is to bring this person closer to God, then I'm pretty convinced Rav Moshe wouldn't like it, but I don't know why at the end of the day his argument necessarily wins out, because if you think you're giving somebody good advice, then it's not lifnei iver. It's something else. Lifnei iver is to give somebody bad advice. Now Rav Moshe could say your shikul hadat, which means your analysis is wrong, that this is a terrible thing on a social level and so on, and so forth. But I'm just pointing out this is not as simple as we would think. I want to return, though, to something which we saw last week, which we ignored completely, and this is on the next to the last page, on the tshuva from Rav Sternbach. At the very, very end, right, that's the long thing, looks like this, page 5 it should be, he also seems to look at the macro situation. He says it's not lifnei iver. Why? Because you have in mind for the person to do good, you want to help the person, you want to bring them closer. And then he writes in the last paragraph, "Mokom acher hiveti midivrei Mishnah Berurah b'Shear Tzion, Simen Shin Vav, Sifkatin Mem, Sifkatin, should be Dalet, Mem Dalet, Sha'av chayev l'dog l'bito sh'lo tishtamed, sh'hu ge'ula v'kiruvla, u'mashm sh'zeh chuvah miyuchedet b'kurvim." Okay. We have to see exactly what is it that he's talking about over here. And this is something which may actually surprise you. Look at page 2, source number 8. Mi sheshalcho lo, somebody who has sent a message. Shehutziu bito mi beito b'shabbat. Lahutzia miklal Yisrael. Somebody receives a message that their daughter was taken from their home and will no longer be part of the Jewish people. This means she was kidnapped by non-Jews, and now she will be raised as a non-Jew. So what do you do? Is this pekuach nefesh? She'll live fine and healthy. They'll give her food. So is this pekuach nefesh? Are you allowed to break Shabbat to save this person? He writes, the Shulchan Aruch continues and writes, mitzvah asum l'derech pa'amav l'shtadel b'atzalata. It is a mitzvah to go and drive off. By the way, notice that word l'hishtadel, to try to save her. V'yotze afilu chutz l'sholosh parsaot, you let her go outside of the Tchum Shabbat and so on. V'ilo boi kafinan le, the person doesn't want to, how can he break Shabbat? You force the person to break Shabbat in such a case. Source 9, the Mishnah Berurah writes, Shotziu bito urcha de milta nakat. He took the case that was actually discussed, meaning this is just an example. Urcha de milta means that's just an example. This is not the only time that you apply this principle. V'udin acher rashai l'chalel Shabbat kidei l'hatzilam yisur hagadol. You're allowed to break Shabbat to save somebody from a more severe sin. The kolza mayrish yitzu en yehudi mi beito ba'ones. And that's talking about the person is what's called an ones, where it's against their will. V'im kain hi tirur lo l'sum l'derech pa'mav l'tzila d'kaimelan im enu poshaya chayv l'sot yisur azuta kadei shelo yaseh haver yisur rabba. Unless the person is totally guilty of pshi'ah, means that they are, the negligence is on their part. This person was taken; it's against their will. So you're able to break Shabbat. By the way, the importance of this halacha is that this speaks of spiritual pikuach nefesh. That's what's significant over here. That in a case of spiritual pikuach nefesh, you are allowed to break Shabbat. We also see another thing very clearly in this case, and what's that? There's such a principle as a small law and a big law. What's a small law over here? What's a relatively unimportant law? Yeah, breaking Shabbat is the relatively minor law. What's the major law? Being identified as a Jew, right? And living your life as a Jew is a larger thing. So over here, we're told you could break Shabbat to prevent somebody else from being taken outside of the Jewish people. Now, this is theoretically a very dangerous halacha. because, you know, we can now imagine every rabbi having license to go to the beach in Tel Aviv on Shabbat, because who knows who is being taken away from the Jewish people there that we may need to save them. And I think, you know, if Shlomo Zalman was hesitated to write what he wrote, over here we have to hesitate even more on this. But this also gives me this analysis in terms of the micro and the macro, although I do have to admit that he did give one criteria. He says as long as the person did this ba'ones, it's against their will. I do want to remind you that the Rambam writes that regarding the entire case of tinuk shenishba, people that are raised in non-religious homes, he says that they're all considered to be tinuk shenishba today, and the Rambam writes harehi ka'onos. These people, it's against their will. It's not their fault that they're not religious. So that would give us, you know, again, a little bit more space. But most importantly, Rav Sternbach did throw this in at the end of his tshuva. Again, he threw away the problem of lifnei iver, and he said, by the way, there's another consideration over here which he did not spell out for us really clearly, but what's this other consideration? There is such a thing called spiritual pekuach nefesh, where here we're not, here again, I want to stress, here I'm not talking about a problem of the other person possibly breaking Shabbat in order to come over to your house. Here we're talking about you getting in your car and driving to pick them up and to bring them over. So this is just so much further, even though I will readily admit that this is an extreme case, and when do we make applications of this extreme case? This has to be done with a great deal of care and to know when this applies and when this perhaps doesn't apply. Yeah. Right. So I'll come to that in a sec. Datlash, dati, right? So now what if somebody was brought up religious and is no longer religious? So I would say that anybody who was brought up in this generation, that would also be considered to be tinok shenishba. I don't think that there's that much of a difference. I mean, you'll say, but they went to yeshiva. They went to religious schools. So you're going to tell me how good the religious schools were? Or the religious schools themselves are the stumbling block?
No, they grew up in religious homes.
I understand that. And I'll say it again. The religious schools are the stumbling block, which means these people, I mean, on the most part, I would be very hesitant to say that these people should be considered to be outright sinners. Again, if you want to deal with strategy, give me one more minute. There's two more things that I want to say, and then I'll come to some more of the practical situations. This, by the way, could serve as a very good source for allowing people to drive to shul on Shabbat, which means the conservative movement wanted to say he can drive to shul on Shabbat, so this could have been the source. Again, I think the mistake was to turn an extreme law into the mainstream law and say something which should only be used with great sensitivity in the most extreme cases to turn it into public policy. That's where the problem comes in. But what would the Orthodox perspective be? And I want to read something which I read 20 years ago. It was the hardest part of preparing for this year, was to find these two lines. Something which Rav Lichtenstein wrote in a symposium on the state of orthodoxy in Tradition magazine in spring 1982. And he said the following, and I have to tell you what he says before, the couple lines before this. The context was, he's talking about the orthodoxy in America and the attitude that the Orthodox should have to the situation that the reform and conservative movements are dwindling away. Should we be saying, well, this is wonderful because then we won't have any competition? We'll have better market share? Or should we be saying, this is terrible because people are being lost to the Jewish people? So he then, and again, he does have a doctorate in English literature from Harvard, so I would assume he's a little careful with the way that he phrased this. And he's talking about a Reform Jew driving to a Reform temple on Shabbat. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, listen to the way that he writes this. Can anyone responsibly say that it's better for a marginal Jew in Dallas or Dubuque? That's how you say this? Dubuque? Northeast Iowa. I looked it up. Didn't tell me how you pronounce it, but it's there in Iowa. I guess he needed this like alliteration of something to go with Dallas. So, can anyone responsibly say that it's better for a marginal Jew in Dallas or Dubuque to lose his religious identity altogether rather than drive to his temple? By the way, what didn't he say? Right. He didn't say, I hereby say you should do it. But he also didn't say, can anybody respond to tell them not to drive? Which means, well, what's he really dealing with? Lose the Jewish identity. What is he looking at? He's looking at a macro situation. You're looking at a macro situation. The rules perhaps change a little bit. Take a look at page 25. By the way, the reason it says page 25 on it is because I really do have 25 pages at home. No. This is part of the same thing that I collected. Look at the last paragraph. He writes, Umikol ha'amor, based on everything that I've written to him, this is the Sri Deyesh. He's the one who said, it cannot be lifnei iver if you have good intentions in mind. He writes, yesh tshuva l'kama shelot hanagot b'din lifnei iver. This has many applications regarding questions that come up with lifnei iver. Kigon, for example, im mutar l'sader kiddushin la'anashim she'enu zehirim b'isernita. Is a rabbi allowed to perform a wedding if the couple are not necessarily going to keep Taharat Mishpacha? O imutar l'shadchan l'zaveg zugim. Shelo yitnahagu al pidinei Torah. Are you allowed to make a shidduch between two non-religious people? I'll tell you a story. Maaseh shehaya kach haya. I see some guy visiting Israel, visiting Yerushalayim, sitting in the Beit Midrash. I was sitting there, and I know him, and he looks very, very upset, very depressed. I say, what's the matter? He says, I went to meet a shadchan today. He's probably today around 52, 53. He's not married, never was married, but he's going to lots of shadchanim. So he went to a shadchan. She asked, what do you do? So he said, well, I'm involved in Wall Street, and I make a nice living, but I spend a lot of my time inviting people for dinner Friday night, giving some Torah shiurim, and I invite non-religious people to my home, or make a Shabbat dinner, and I try to do it so non-religious men and women will meet one another, and I've made lots and lots of shidduchim. And they looked at him and said, "Are you kidding? You're not allowed to do this. It's asur." He goes, "Why?" He said, "Because they're not going to keep Taharat Mishpacha. It's absolutely forbidden, absolutely prohibited." So I said to him, the problem is you spoke to the shadchan. So instead of feeling good about himself, she made him feel that he's been doing terrible things. He had made, I don't know, 30, 40 shidduchim over the years by inviting people over. And she said that is a terrible sin that he did. So I said, if you want, I'll take you right now with me. You can pick whichever gadol you want. I'll go with you and I'll ask the question. And we'll see what answer we get. And then the question would have been, is it better in today's day and age where the issue is, you're not dealing with in Europe where you maybe had one non-religious guy and one non-religious girl, you make a shidduch, the two of them together, so then you're guaranteeing, what would they do? They would make a shidduch with the non-religious guy with somebody who's going to beat him into place, and the other way around. But to put the two of them together, so then you're almost guaranteeing a problem. Over here, when you're dealing with the situation of Am Yisrael being that it is, where intermarriage is the way that it is, if you bring them together and you look at this on a micro level, so the micro level, oh, these people are going to sin together. You're responsible for all those sins. So lifnei iver, you're responsible. Is that really the case? Or do you say, look at this in the macro level. What is your intention? Is your intention in order to prevent intermarriage? Your intention is to prevent intermarriage and keep people Jewish and keep them connected. And maybe a couple years down the line, they'll even send their kids to yeshiva. So then what are you talking about in terms of lifnei iver? It's not lifnei iver in this case. Again, that was the Sri Deyesh. What was the point that he had said? That if your intention is to do something which is good, if your intention is to serve God, you can stand in front of God and say, I didn't want your children to intermarry. Was God then come and say to you, well, you're responsible for every time they didn't keep Hilchot Nidah? No. And that's what he says over here as the final consideration. Again, I am horrified at the way that some rabbis deal with these situations. I'm not even going to tell you because you'll get upset as well. But over here, he clearly says that this his point and his understanding of lifnei iver, that if you have good intentions, it's not lifnei iver. So now let's go back to our practical cases. In terms of inviting somebody over for dinner for Friday night, I don't think would have a problem following the position of Shlomo Zalman, which is echoed by a number of other poskim, namely, as long as you, A, really have their best interests in mind, and you think that by inviting them over, this is something which is potentially good for them, and again, you'll be able to stand in front of God one day and say, I thought this was something which can help, that already makes it not lifnei iver. Additionally, if you say to them, here's a place to stay, you have a place to stay if you want to, You have a bed, and seriously, you have something prepared for them that further takes away the situation of lifnei iver. If somebody's going to ask me in terms of inviting somebody, you know, time after time after time like this, I think that each time you need to evaluate it and to say, is this something which is potentially helpful? Again, let's keep in mind the thing that we saw before. You're able, even if you're going to say you're breaking some kind of halacha, we're told if something can bring somebody back into Klal Yisrael, then you're even allowed to break Shabbat in order to attempt to try to do that. Again, that's what we saw. And again, I want to stress that that's something which Rav Sternbruch brought into this case. You're going to tell me that, let's say, children, there's a fellow that I know who would not invite his children over because, you know, she married somebody who's not religious, he's not religious, and whatever, doesn't want to invite them over. And he had a question about the Seder and a question about if this potentially can bring them closer. If you're doing this, it's nice that the whole family is together. That's a nice thing, the family's together. I don't think that's a good enough reason. If you think that them being together with you is something which is good for them, then it's not lifnei iver. If it's just something that will make you feel good, I hesitate much more in terms of... You want to make them feel bad?
No, if you don't invite them and the whole family's together and they're not...
So then offer them... offer them a place to stay. But again, I'd rather deal with those kinds of questions on a case-by-case basis. But my advice then would be that, because then you're saying they'll feel bad, that goes back to Shlomo Zalman's thing about giving food, that by not inviting them, you'll be pushing them away more. Look at my terrible religious family. They won't even invite me. They invite everybody else. So that may be placing a stumbling block by not inviting them. But again, you want to solve the problem. So then you are doing it for their good, ultimately. You are doing it for their good, so they should not feel more estranged to religious people. But I would again say, cover yourself by arranging them a place to stay. And that way, it takes away at least part of the problem.
How many times have you heard, you've read about Baal Shem Tov, and they said, well, you know, we've been at people's houses, we saw how beautiful Shabbat was, and how loving the family was, and that made me want to learn, and da-da-da-da-da. And the next thing you know, they're in yeshiva or something.
Yes, I've heard that.
Shabbos, and what do we do on doing Chagim? And, you know, some of us say, well, I don't care, I just want the child to come, he can drive, blah, blah, blah. And then those of us who are really, we have an internal conflict because Shabbos is such an important part of our lives, more than even, I would say, even Yom Kippur, because it's every week. It's not a one historical event in our history. It's our very being.
Mm-hmm.
And if you convey to your child who came from a religious home and went to religious schools and even went to midrashot and blah, 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 at a certain point, we're talking basically
right.
about children who don't get married at a certain
right.
age and then they're disillusioned. And they, if you say to your child, yeah, you can come on Shabbos, you're compromising your most important, one of your most important I can't find the word, but it's like you're saying to a child, as important as it is, it's not an important
right.
to me. It's like you being there is more important than my serving or HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's very complex.
Right, right. It is complex, and that's why this needs to be done on a case-by-case basis and how it impacts the other children in the house and the other people. Yes, there are other issues involved in this, and that's why I will insist that people, the responsible thing to do is to ask a question what to do. And I'll just end off. Naomi told me once that her family invited a relative over, her aunt, and they came for Shabbos, and they were very surprised that at the end of dinner, they got on the train, and they went home. And they just didn't know that this aunt and family weren't keeping Shabbat. And the bottom line is they never invited them again, correct? Any other reasons they didn't invite her again? Okay, anyway. And then a couple of years ago, and this is not the same aunt, not the same side of the family, well, a little bit on the other side, And we were invited to a bar mitzvah of somebody that I'd never met and somebody that you had last seen maybe, I want to say how old you are, 30 years ago. And
more.
And it was somebody that didn't even know that well, and they're very surprised. We're very surprised when it turned out that the guy was religious, and spoke to him, and he said that he had never seen a Shabbat. He had never seen anything, and he spent one Shabbat in their house when he was how old? Around
just before
his bar mitzvah. Spent one Shabbat in the house, in a religious house, and looked and saw the whole family together and saw the Shabbat, and because of that, he ended up becoming religious. That's what he said. So I agree 100%. You don't necessarily know what kind of impact this has later on the line. The main thing that we need to do is to realize that there are situations we are allowed to invite. That is what I'm saying as the bottom line. How to apply it. If you are this outreach professional, that makes it a little bit easier. Now you know exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. If there are other situations in terms of family, it gets a little more complex. In terms of those complex situations, I would suggest asking a shaila. And depending upon all the subtleties, it may depend what the answer is. But if you have somebody's best interest in mind and you tell them, I want you to be here because you're doing it for them, that already, at least according to some of the things that we've seen, would be allowed. Namshich Bezrat Hashem.